is as clear as a sunny day. I hear it as if the person saying it is right beside me. Only no one is there. Fear makes my blood run cold. Am I losing it? After all these years, have I finally cracked? After years of not caring what happened to me, suddenly it matters a hell of a lot. I have Hayden now. I have a new reason to keep going. I can't be going insane now. I can't give in. For that reason, I ignore the words. I continue backing onto the street. I chance a look over at the house and guilt hits me. The voice hasn't been wrong. Am I risking Hayden's life by ignoring it now? Motherfucker, I growl, watching as the taillights from the truck I'm chasing completely disappear in front of me. I slam my hands up against the steering wheel, fighting rage and the need to pursue the fucker who tried to take Hayden from me. Hayden needs you, I hear again, and I want to scream. I'm about to scream like a madman at the voice and tell it to go away. I'm driven by the fear of actually losing my mind. Then I hear it again, and this time the words take away my breath. Please, Daddy, go to her. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. A cold sweat breaks out over my body, and I begin shaking. I've lost it. I've completely fallen apart. That soft voice, that beautiful soft voice, that can't be her. It can't be Annabelle. Tears sting my eyes and I try to hold them in. I really do try. Maybe I would have succeeded, I'm not sure. It's then I feel the warmth. It starts at the base of my back and spreads up, reaching around over my stomach and to my chest. My heart feels so full and warm I think it might burst, and I can literally feel arms go around my neck as the heat continues to spread through me. Anne. Annabelle. I whisper, afraid to breathe, afraid to hope, and scared I'm right, terrified I'm not. The scent of strawberries surrounds me. It clicks into place. Her shampoo. She loved strawberry. The voice isn't loud. It's faint, and she... It sounds tired. I press the gas and move the truck back into the driveway at Hayden's. I don't know what to think. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm so confused. I recognize I'm crying when I have to wipe the tears out of my eyes to see to park the truck. Annabelle, can you hear me? Can you talk to Daddy? I ask her, needing to continue the connection in case... In case I'm talking to my dead daughter? How fucked up is that? It doesn't matter, there's just silence. I should have kept going. Now, whoever it was that shot at Hayden is still out there. I unlock the door and open it roughly. Pissed at myself, at the man who shot Hayden, at the world. It doesn't help that when I open it, Hayden is standing by the table and phone. Michael, she cries. I thought I told you to stay under the table till I got back, I growl, pissed off about what's going on in my head, and pissed off that Hayden can't do the one thing I asked. Michael, we've got a problem, she says again, her face white. Yeah, you've got someone taking pot shots through your window. That's why it would be good if you would stay where I tell you to fucking stay. I bark, shoving my hand through my hair so frustrated I can't see straight. Not that. I think that's our biggest problem right now. If you don't mind, I need to call the police, for the good it will do, and then I'm going to call Victor. I walk over to the phone hanging on the wall, pick up the cordless handset that's resting in the base's cradle and start to dial 911. If ever there was an emergency, this would be it.
Will you listen to me, Michael? We have a problem.
Hayden, I really-
Damn it, Michael! My water broke!
It's then I notice the front of her dress, below her waist, is completely wet. Motherfucker.
Chapter 25. Hayden.
Looks like you're about to deliver that baby a little early, Hayden,
Dr. Mullins announces after conferring with the nurse.
How are you feeling?
Nervous, but I'm okay.
You're getting the epidural, right? The nurse will be in to give that to you. Once the contractions get a little closer together, it will be showtime.
And you're sure everything is okay? I ask him, nervously, rubbing my stomach. Her heartbeat keeps dropping down lower than it has been, and...
The baby is perfectly fine, just getting ready to meet its mama.
His words reassure me some. I'm still a nervous wreck. Michael is by my side, but he seems shook up, and I don't think it has to do with the baby. Maybe it's because we were shot at. He took a minute to call Victor and then the cops when we first got here. He had to go out in the hall and talk to them. I thought they would have to speak to me, but apparently Michael handled it so I wouldn't have to. He came back, and he's been standing by my side, holding my hand ever since. Yet sometimes when I look up at him, his face is clouded with confusion. A part of me is scared he's about to lash out or maybe leave. I'm praying I'm wrong. I really need him here.
I'll be back in a bit. We still have a little while to go. I'm afraid your friend will have to leave while the anesthesiologist gives you the epidural. He can come back and visit before the actual delivery, though. I'm not leaving. Period. They can do whatever they need to do while I'm here,
Michael replies, and his tone is solid, matter-of-fact, and feels as immovable as a mountain. Somehow that helps me breathe a little easier.
I'm sorry, but we normally only allow the parents or person that Ms. Graham
I want Michael with me.
I'm the baby's father,
he growls. His fingers flex in my hand and my heart speeds up. I know the vow he made me that night in North Carolina, but so much has happened. I thought maybe he had changed his mind.
Oh, I'm sorry. From talking with Ms. Graham, I understood that she and the father were estranged and that he wanted nothing to do with the child,
the doctor says, looking at Michael with hardness in his eyes.
You thought wrong.
Michael states, I answer, and that's the only words I can get out, but it's enough. I know by the way Michael's hand tightens on mine. My thumb moves across that groove on his hand, and I try to breathe through the emotion I feel inside.
Well, that's great. Always good to see. I'll just send them in,
the doctor says, relaxing. He shakes Michael's hand and tries to reassure me, and then he's gone. I look up at Michael's face and try to smile. His face is tight, like it has been since he came back from chasing the gunman, but he looks down at me and kisses my forehead. His lips move to the shell of my ear, and his warm breath sends shivers of awareness through my body. How that's possible when I'm having contractions and about to give birth, I don't know. But it is. At least with Michael.
We got this, beauty, and before you know it, we'll be holding Maggie in our arms,
he murmurs into my ear. I'm stupid. I know I am. I was hoping he was going to tell me he loved me. It's a foolish dream, and one that refuses to die. Still, Michael's here, and he wants me and Maggie in his life. That should be enough. That makes me happy. You're sure, Michael? I ask him, giving him one last out.
Stop asking, Hayden. I followed you through how many states? You're not getting rid of me. I told you months ago. I'm Maggie's daddy now, and I'm the only man you're going to let between those legs, ever.
You're so romantic, I half laugh, needing to fight the nerves that rise inside of me. It's not flowery proposals or confessions of love. It's still more than I ever thought I'd get in life, and it's with a man I love. I'll love him so much, it will be enough for both of us. Maggie will have a safe home filled with love. I'll make sure both her and Michael never doubt they are loved. It's enough. It has to be enough.
Chapter 26. Beast. Okay, Hayden, I'm going to need you to push with this next contraction. You're close. I need you to bear down and not stop until the contraction ends. Can you do that for me? The doctor asks. Jesus, fuck. How long does delivering a baby take? It was never like this with Jan. But then, with Jan, I wasn't there. I was in the waiting room with my brothers. She didn't want me with her, and I was okay with that. We didn't exactly like each other. Hayden is different. This is slowly killing me. I can't stand to see her in pain, and we've been going at this for motherfucking hours. She's so tired. I can see it written all over her. I'll try, she gasps out. I feel it. Push, Hayden, push, the doctor urges. I support her back, and she squeezes my hand tightly. I feel so fucking useless. You got this, Hayden. I know you can do it, sweetheart. Push hard. I encourage her, feeling completely lost. I'm trying, she cries, ending the word in a growl that is so loud it hurts my ears. The contraction subsides and she sits back. I know you are, Beauty. I know you are, I tell her, kissing her head. Good job, Hayden. Your baby is crowning. This next contraction, push.
Oh, God. I don't know if I can do this,
she whispers guiltily. You can. You're going to push, and then we're going to hold Maggie in our arms, and we're going to give her everything good in this world. I murmur close to her. Her hand flexes in mine. She's yet to let go of me, and I like that. Fuck, no. I love that.
I'm so tired, Michael. Oh, God, it's coming again.
Push, Hayden, the doctor orders.
Michael,
she whispers frantically. I'm right here, Beauty, I'm right here. Push out our little girl, you can do this. You're the strongest woman I know. I urge her again, and I'm not lying. She is, she absolutely is. Her hand bites into mine. She pulls herself up by it, and immediately I hold her back. Her fingernails dig into the skin so tight I have to wonder if she draws blood. She pushes so hard I shake, because I know the pain has to be intense, and there's not a damn thing I can do about it. She screams out my name. Mine. She screams out my name as she brings Maggie into this world. The reality of that weighs down on me and it pushes deep inside of me, into the dark spots of my soul that have been scarred and eaten up with hate and misery. We hear the baby crying, and I slowly let Hayden fall back against the pillows. She's crying, and I do my best to kiss her forehead and praise her. She's amazing. You want to cut the cord, Daddy? The doctor asks unexpectedly. It feels like someone slapped me. I look at Hayden, and she's crying through her tears, but she's smiling.
Our daughter needs you now, Michael,
she whispers, and Jesus, fucking hell, I'm turning into a weepy old woman, because I feel tears in my eyes. I squeeze her hand and then go over to the doctor. The nurse helps and holds the cord while I take the silver scissors she hands me and cut the cord. I look down at the baby and all I see is perfection. A dark thatch of hair crowns the perfect head. But that's not what catches my eye the most.
How is she, Michael? Is she beautiful?
Hayden asks anxiously, and before I can answer, I have to clear my throat. Beautiful, sweetheart. There's just... Well, there's one problem, I tell her, walking back to her as the nurses bring the child on the other side of Hayden. One releases Hayden's gown, revealing her breasts to the world. I grunt in displeasure. Despite the doctor seeing so much of my woman, I'm not crazy, it keeps happening. The other nurse lays the baby against Hayden's chest.
We'll clean her up in a second. The doctor likes to let the mom and baby connect skin to skin for a minute as long as the child is doing good.
Oh, my God,
Hayden explains, big, sloppy tears falling from those beautiful gray eyes.
She's perfect, Michael. She's beautiful,
Hayden cries, her hand going slowly over the baby's head. She is, I agree quietly, choked with emotion. She has no idea I'm talking about her. I don't know how to articulate it. I just know Hayden is without a doubt the single most beautiful woman on the face of the earth, inside and out. There's just one problem, I reiterate. The nurse comes to claim the baby for evaluating and cleaning. Hayden's eyes follow them, so I clear my throat. Hayden, honey, we have a problem.
What? What's wrong?
You're going to need to pick a new name.
Why's that?
She asks, confused, and I can't believe she hasn't noticed yet. She's a he, sweetheart. We have a baby boy. I tell her with a smile, and the grin only gets bigger when Hayden's mouth drops open. She looks at me and then back at where the nurses are working on the baby. And a damn fine baby boy at that, Miss Graham, the doctor interrupts. We knew for a while, but you kept insisting you didn't want to know, and well, he shrugs. But he's healthy, and the nurses will have him cleaned up and give him back to you soon. I have another delivery, but I'll be back to check on you, he says. And I'm busy arranging Hayden's gown back on her to cover her up. Fucking nurses just left her like that. Oh, one more question, the doctor adds, standing by the door. What name do the nurses put on the information for him? They'll confirm the birth certificate information with you later. I look down at Hayden, wondering what she will tell him. She's not even looking at the doctor, and she's still crying, but her eyes are on me.
Connor Michael Jameson,
she whispers. Fuck me. This woman unmans me. Time and time again, she completely unmans me. If there are tears sliding down my face, I don't give a fuck. I walk over to my woman and I take her mouth. I take it hard, I take it fast, and I take it with meaning. I take it because it's mine. She's mine.
Chapter 27. Hayden. Michael, why are there men I don't know surrounding the house? I ask, frustrated. There's at least three guys, three scary-looking guys, standing around my house. None of them look familiar.
Protection. I'm not taking any chances on something happening to you and the baby. I can't be awake 24/7, and I can't be everywhere. This helps,
he explains patiently, his hand at my back as he helps me up the steps. I'm holding the baby. We both had to stay in the hospital a little longer. He had jaundice and had to stay longer, and I wasn't about to leave him. Now he's got the all clear, and we're home. Finally. He will still have to go back for some blood work to make sure his levels keep going down. But who are they? I've never seen them before. Where's Clive?
Will you forget about Clive? Michael growls. Jesus, woman, he's gone.
Are you jealous? I ask, giggling, because obviously he is. I'd be a liar if I didn't say that it didn't make me feel good.
Hayden,
he growls, and I giggle harder. Fine, whatever. Who are these people? I ask him when I finally get control of myself.
Can't we get Junior in the house first, so he doesn't catch a chill?
It's 80 degrees out here, Michael.
Are you always going to argue with me?
He grumbles, but his eyes are crinkling, which means he's happy. Probably, I giggle as he opens the door to my kitchen and lets us in. Let me just get Michael changed and we'll—
We'll do nothing, Hayden. You're going to rest.
But I'm hungry, and— No offense, Michael, you have many skills, but cooking is definitely not one of them. I rebuff him gently.
I can make a mean bologna sandwich.
I curl my nose and shake my head. No. No bologna.
Fine. I bought you some tuna. I'll make you that. You whined while you were pregnant that you had to give it up,
he says, and he has no idea how much he has floored me. He remembered I liked tuna. He remembered that I hated giving it up. More importantly, he went out and bought it for me. I don't know where he found the time. He barely left me alone, and yet he managed to have our home protected and make sure we had food in the house. I hadn't even bought the baby a car seat yet, but he showed up today with a brand new one. The baby loves it, though instead of leaving him in it, I'm carrying him now. I'm not supposed to lift a lot yet, so I was afraid to chance carrying him and the seat. I think I love you, Michael Jameson, I tell him, reaching up on my tiptoes to kiss him. He takes my kiss, and it might have gone further, but the baby picks that moment to cry out. We break apart, and I give the baby some attention, quieting him down.
Why don't you go rock him in the nursery, and I'll bring your food and take over while you eat,
he suggests. Yeah, I was right. I definitely love you, I tell him. I used to be nervous about saying it, but I've noticed something. Every time I tell Michael I love him, his eyes sparkle and he smiles. Every time. Knowing that I love him makes him happy. Maybe if I say it enough, one day, he might say it back.
Go. I'll try and fix you a sandwich without burning it,
he mutters, which makes me giggle. I walk through the hall and open the door to the nursery. When I got here, I began drawing the images on the wall to match the old nursery. Yet I hadn't been able to replace all the things Michael purchased. I looked and looked around here and on the internet, but I hadn't been able to find the animals again. I went with the solid color yellow to match, because I had no choice. When I walk into the room, everything has changed. Everything, including the furniture. All the things that Michael bought me in North Carolina are now here. Here in this house. Little Michael now has the nursery I always intended to give him, right down to this beautiful but silly lamp of an elephant wearing a yellow tutu. I don't know how long I stand there, touching the lamp by the glider. It must have been a while because Michael comes in carrying a paper plate with my food and a drink. I look up at him, and I do my best to broadcast all the love and gratitude I have in my heart for him right now.
Hayden.
When did you find time? How did you get it all here? I ask him, my voice so soft that he probably has to strain to hear it.
Victor helped me get it here, but I had already shipped it to his house after you left. I wanted Michael, to have it.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you so much, I tell him. My heart's so full, it's a miracle I even get the words out. He clears his throat out, obviously uncomfortable. He puts the food on the small shelf by the door.
It was yours.
He tries to shrug off, and I let it go because the last thing I want is for him to be embarrassed.
That does bring up one thing we need to discuss. You can't call me Michael and then the baby that too. It's too damn confusing.
Do you wish I hadn't named the baby after you?
No. I like that he has my name. Especially my last name, Hayden.
I don't know what to do then, because I'm not calling you Beast.
I don't want you to.
Then what do you suggest? I ask him, completely lost.
I'd hate for the little guy to grow up being called Junior.
We'll call him Connor then, I tell Michael, and he smiles.
Connor it is.
He agrees and kisses me softly. Yeah, he definitely likes that the baby has his name. Connor it is. I murmur against Michael's lips before he pulls away. He looks down at me, his fingers curling a strand of my hair. I'm not sure he's aware of what he's doing, but he's smiling broadly. And a smile on Michael's face is starting to look more and more natural.
Chapter 28. Beast. We've lost you, haven't we, brother? Torch asks, and inside I feel a strange mixture of guilt, regret, and freedom swirl inside of me. I'm tired, man. That life cost me everything. I'm just starting to find peace again. I can't handle that life anymore. I respond, clutching my phone tightly. I've been dreading this conversation. Man, life has changed here. It's good. It won't be like, but the memories will always be there, Torch. I answer him, finding that spot on my jaw, under my beard, and scratching, needing to touch it. It's become my crutch, and I know how fucked up that sounds. When I was at the club, the memories were all there. You guys have lives there, I don't. Beast, man, I'm serious. My life ended with Annabelle's. I'd walk down the hall and past the room where she used to sleep. I'd go to my room, and there were times I could smell her there. I'd hear her screams. And fuck going outside where it happened. I'd have to get drunk just to be able to do it. I can't live there anymore. I just can't. But you're better now, he starts, but he doesn't understand. I look around the room. Hayden is getting Connor down for his nap. This is something I'm not sure I'm ready for her to hear. Fuck, man, that's just it. I'm not. Some days I feel like I'm losing it. The other day I actually thought I heard Annabelle speaking to me. Memories, it wasn't a memory, Torch. It was in the moment. I don't know, I can't explain it, but it felt real. Beast, listen, man. You've been a rock through all of this. Maybe it's time to talk to a grief counselor or a therapist. No, man. I'm not talking to some shrink about my daughter and the pain I live with. They want to act like they understand, but they don't. No one could, unless they've been through it. Well, then, find a support group. Parents who have lost a child? Go to meetings. Reach out. Maybe someday. Hayden keeps me going. She's the reason I'm breathing. That's why I have to find the fucker who shot at her. I can't let anything happen to her, Torch. I can't be the reason another person I care about dies. That's another reason to bring her here. Let us protect her. You have to know she'd be safer here, Beast. Fuck no. I'm not subjecting Hayden to club life again, man. She's been through fucking hell. I will not do that to her. Jesus, man. We're nothing like those fuckheads. We're not. But she's not a stranger to the life either, man. And that's not what she wants now. And it's not what she wants for Connor. It's not what I fucking want for Connor. I hear you, I do. I don't like it, but I hear you. And I understand, he answers. I breathe a little easier with those words. Then you make Skull understand, I joke. Yeah, you're going to need more than me for that, dude. He's not taking it well. I figured, I answer, resigned. I am dreading that conversation. So any luck tracing the tags I gave you? Yeah, just like you figured, it was a stolen plate. Christ. The police found a few prints in the abandoned vehicle, but so far nothing that's raised a red flag. So we're no closer to finding out what's going on. Pretty much. Are you sure it wasn't Blade? It wasn't him I chased after, I know that. I can't be sure he wasn't the one paying this guy, but something seems off. I feel like I'm missing something. Plus, there was something about the way this guy moved. I don't think he's an amateur. Christ on a cracker. Do you need us to send some men down to help guard the place? No. Victor's men are here. We're good. You know Skull's not happy about that either, right? I figured. I tell him, rubbing the back of my neck. I'll call Skull next week. I wouldn't put it off too much longer. The more he stews... Yeah, I'm familiar with his temper. I'll make it soon. Good. It's been real, brother, but I'm going to get off of here. I got a naked woman chained to my bed, and if I don't hurry back in there, she's going to cuss my ass instead of giving me hers. Jesus, you fucker. I don't want to hear about your sex life. I don't know why Katie puts up with you. I ask myself that every day. Still don't have an answer, brother, but I'm damn happy she does. I'll be in touch if I find out anything new. Sounds good, brother. Later, I tell him. Later, he answers, ending the conversation. I click my phone off and stare at it for a minute. I was hoping against hope that Torch had something new to tell me. I have to find out who's behind the attack on Hayden, and I can't explain why, but something in my gut tells me it's not Blade. At least, not him alone. I have to be missing something. I just wish I knew who or what it was.
Chapter 29. Hayden. I just stand over Connor's crib and stare down at him. It's hard to believe I've had him home 2 weeks now. It seems like a dream. He's so perfect. He's turning into a greedy chunk, too. He's got little roles already started. When I was shopping for a baby, I stupidly began buying things themed towards a girl. Dee Dee wisely insisted I buy some gender neutral. Still, Michael took me shopping a few days after we got home to buy more. He even picked some of it out. The outfit that Connor is wearing now, which looks like a little baseball uniform with bright green stripes running down it, is one of them. It even has this adorable matching baseball hat to go with it. Michael even surprised me by picking up a bib that said, "Mommy's Little Slugger" on it. Everything in my life is perfect right now. As long as you disregard the fact that someone might be trying to kill me. I bend down to kiss Connor gently and decide to go find Michael. He's been quiet the last few days, and I know it's because he's worrying about the shooter. Or at least I hope it is. I find myself worrying that he regrets being listed as Connor's legal father. I suppose there's a chance Blade might show up one day and cause trouble, but I doubt it. Especially when so many people want to kill him. As I round the corner of the hall that connects to the kitchen, I hear Michael talking. I stall my steps, not wanting to disturb him. He's the only one talking, so it has to be the telephone. I start to turn around and leave him to finish the conversation when I hear him say something that catches my attention. I probably shouldn't, but I go to the entranceway of the kitchen and lean against it, watching him. He's sitting at the table, and from this angle, I can see the side of his face. He's completely unguarded. And that pain he keeps hidden lately is clearly there, shining like a beacon. He looks so sad that I start to go wrap my arms around him.
But the memories will always be there, Torch. When I was at the club, the memories were all there. You guys have lives there. I don't. I'm serious. My life ended with Annabelle's. I'd walk down the hall and past the room where she used to sleep. I'd go to my room, and there were times I could smell her there. I'd hear her screams, and fuck, going outside where it happened. I'd have to get drunk just to be able to do it. I can't live there anymore. I just can't.
His words hit me with the force of a physical blow. Michael dealt with this kind of pain inside of him for years and years. He stayed there, trying to fit in and belong, all while carrying this kind of pain inside of him. How could his friends not notice? They proclaimed to be his family. Couldn't they see the daily torture he was putting himself through? I can tell from the conversation that whoever he is talking to is probably trying to get him to come home. I immediately want to scream, no. He's mine now. They can't have him back. I need him. I love him.
Fuck, man. That's just it. I'm not. Some days I feel like I'm losing it. The other day I actually thought I heard Annabelle speaking to me. It wasn't a memory, Torch. It was in the moment. I don't know. I can't explain it, but it felt real.
His words leave me speechless. How do I react to them? Is that normal? After all of the trauma that Michael has been through, maybe some of what we're going through here reminds him of his past. It would have to. Nervous butterflies hit my stomach, making me uneasy. I try to pull my thoughts away from the fear that's beginning to form. I can't judge him on this. You see things on television and read things all the time about people who have lost loved ones and get mysterious messages. Who am I to say it's not possible? It doesn't seem it to me, but then I've never had someone like Michael in my life. If something happened to me, I'm pretty sure I'd fight the power of heaven and hell just to be close to him one more time.
Maybe someday. Hayden keeps me going. She's the reason I'm breathing. That's why I have to find the fucker who shot at her. I can't let anything happen to her, Torch. I can't be the reason another person I love, care about, dies.
I back away from the doorway and go into the living room and all but fall onto the couch. Did Michael almost admit that he loves me? For a second, I thought he was going to say it. I grieve that he didn't, but he did admit he needs me. If that's all I get, when you add that to everything else, then I have more than I dreamed possible.
What are you doing in here, beauty?
Michael asks from the door. I look up to see him standing there and try to wipe my thoughts away, not wanting him to read the mild disappointment on my face when in reality he's given me a great gift. Connor passed out, so I thought I'd curl up in here for a nap. Michael, what are you doing? I cry when he stalks over to the sofa and picks me up as if I were as light as a feather.
Carrying my woman to our bed to nap.
But I feel lazy if I go to bed in the middle of the day alone.
Who says you're going to be alone?
He says, looking down at me. I bring my hands up to tangle into his hair. He constantly wears it down now. I think because he knows I like it so much. I use my hold to pull his lips to mine. It's a brief kiss, and one of frustration because I can't have sex with Michael yet. In that case, hurry up, I tell him when we break apart. This mom is tired, I add when he smiles. His eyes brighten with joy. His smile stretches across his face, and I feel it all the way to my toes.
Chapter 30. Blade. My club was never what you would call clean. We lived there, didn't really give a fuck about much more than that. It was a place where we drank, smoked, fucked, got high, and did anything else that made life worthwhile. This place, though, makes my nose curl every fucking time. I hate it, almost as much as I hate the man who owns it. Cecil Drummer Kraber. My brother. I despise the asshole, I always have. He's my older brother who also raised me in Preacher. When we moved out, we swore we'd never come back to Cecil and ask for a goddamn thing. Yet here I am. It's just another reason to hate Hayden and that ugly fuck she's hooked herself up with. How she could let that mangled mess of flesh crawl between her legs is beyond me. Whores are all the same. Doesn't matter whose dick they get as long as they get something more out of it. Drummer, you have to do something. I growl, tired of keeping my head down, begging like a damned dog asking for table scraps. He sits on some fucking throne-like chair in this damned office and looks at me like I'm some kind of annoyance, like I'm nothing more than a piece of chewing gum he stepped on and is now stuck to the bottom of his shoe. Son of a fucking bitch, I'm tired of it. I get Beast taken care of and Hayden pays for the shit I've gone through, I'll show Drummer. I'll take over his fucking business. Maybe I'll let him see how much better I am at it before I kill him. I did something. I sent my best man after Preacher's dimebag snatch you say is responsible for his death. Your best man? You have got to be kidding me. He couldn't even shoot her and he had a clear fucking shot. He drove away like some frightened kid. You mean like the kid you hired to hold up her store? He did so much better. That was a mistake. You seem to make a lot of those. Drummer counters, and God, I hate him. I lied to him when I told him that Hayden belonged to Preacher. I know if he knew she was mine, he wouldn't give a damn. He is only helping now in order to avenge Preacher's death. Not because he gives a fuck, but because he likes to send out messages that no one touches his world without dying. It's all fucking ego with Drummer. It always has been. I look at him, and I doubt I hide my hate for him very successfully. His office is the back of a meatpacking warehouse. The fucking thing smells like rotted flesh and gasoline. I'm not sure why, it just does. There's a lone light dangling above his used desk, and it's not anything more than a rope and exposed light bulb. The only thing decent in this room is the high-backed leather chair that he sits in. He's smoking a fucking cigar which stinks even more than the fucking room. His dark hair, so different than mine and Preacher's, is oily as shit. He'd probably never get laid if it wasn't for those fucking diamonds on his hands. Money really can buy anything. If I had any left, I sure as fuck wouldn't be here. I did the best I could do with the money I had. It's not my fault the fucking kid messed up by getting greedy and demanding the money first. I mutter, scratching my scalp at the back of my neck and pulling my head down to get control of my nerves. I haven't had a fucking fix in days. I'm starting to suffer withdrawals. I'd ask Drummer for a hit, but the fucker would just say no. I'll find some later on the streets. There's always a way to get it. I've learned that, if nothing else, over the past few months. That's another thing to hate Hayden for. She's the reason I've been turning tricks, and forced to take it up the ass just for a small taste of what used to flow freely in my club. Fucking cunt. You didn't tell me the bitch was pregnant. Alistair's one golden rule, he won't kill a woman who is pregnant. Gee, a fucking assassin with a conscience? I mock, trying to hide the way my hand shakes. You'd be surprised. You still haven't told me what happened to Preacher. Drummer pushes. You know him. He always got off on running a church and seeing how many of those sainted women he could fuck on the altar. He was going after this one and her boyfriend didn't like it when he found out she gave in. I tell him, giving him the lie with a partial truth. Preacher did love the old Reverend Khan, even if this time he was doing it to keep his eye on Hayden without alerting the damned Torresanis. I told him that shit was going to get him killed someday. He never listened to me, though. Neither one of you did, the bastard says. I feel a cold sweat pop out over my body, and my body jerks with the hunger I feel clawing inside of me. Jesus, are you withdrawing, you stupid fuck? Didn't I tell you and Preacher what happens when you mess with that shit? Like you don't, I growl. It's fine, I'll get it contained. I just need you to avenge our brother. I don't let that shit around me, not now. My fucking ex was hooked on that shit. She almost destroyed my business. I was glad to see her go. Fucking cunt didn't tell me she was pregnant when she left. If she were still alive, I'd wring her neck myself. Drummer growls. Get the fuck out of here and don't bother coming back. I'm not helping a stupid junkie, he orders. He's so high and mighty. He doesn't realize I still have an ace up my sleeve. He's the only reason Preacher and I decided to take the job from the Donahues. The thought of killing his daughter and woman made Preacher and me hard for days. We fucked woman after woman after that little victory. It didn't matter that Drummer never knew. We did. What if I told you the man guarding Hayden is the one responsible for your daughter's death? I ask him, baiting my hook and waiting to reel my brother in. What the fuck are you talking about? My men tracked Jan down. They said she died in a freak car explosion, a gasoline leak. My daughter was with her. Still fucking upsets me that I had a daughter I had no idea existed for years. That fucking cunt deserved worse than burning alive. That's where you are wrong. I did some work for the Donahue family. You don't do shit, he mocks. I did. And I happen to know they hired a hit on Beast and that the vehicle Jan was driving that night was actually his. How do you know this? You'd be surprised at what I know, brother. In fact, I know Beast has moved in with this bitch. Maybe you could get revenge on the man who stole your daughter from you and Preacher's ex. Want to know more? Drummer looks me over, and I do my best not to flinch. I'm sitting on a delicate house of cards. I have to be careful not to let them all fall down. It feels like an eternity, sitting here with Drummer staring down at me. Finally, he shifts in his seat, opens the side drawer of his old metal desk. He puts a square mirror on the table with a razor and straw, pushing it towards me. Then he takes out a small, clear bag of coke and sways it back and forth between his fingers. You get this, if I like what you have to say, he says, his face cold. I clamp my hands into fists to fight the urge to yank the drugs out of his hand. I better make this story good. I need those drugs almost as much as I need to see Beast and Hayden dead for the life they've cost me. They will pay.
Chapter 31. Hayden.
Hayden, wake up.
I hear a male voice sing-song. I try to open my eyes, but they seem so heavy. I feel a hand tangled in my hair. Slowly, almost against their will, my eyes open. I expected to see Michael's face. It's not. I don't see Michael at all. In fact, I'm not in bed with Michael, which is where I was when I fell asleep. I'm in a cage. No. The cage. How could that be? I stood there and watched as Crusher demolished the cage. A new cage? A new hell? My heart is pounding in my chest, erratically. About the only thing that is familiar to me is that I'm in my bedroom.
Did you really think you could get away from us, Hayden?
Blade's voice asks, demanding my attention. My eyes move to look at Blade. He's squatted down, looking through the cage at me. He's drunk. I can smell the liquor on his breath. His hair is rumpled, and he's got some scraggly growth started on his chin from not shaving. His fingers are poking through the wide holes of the cage and have latched onto my hair. He gathers more and more until my head is wedged against the cage, the steel pressing into the side of my face.
Fucking bitch. You ruined everything. Did you really think I would let you keep my son from me? I'm going to make you pay now.
Blade, don't do this. Don't touch Connor. He's innocent. You don't want to hurt your own blood. Do what you want to me, but please leave Connor out of this, I beg, fear causing my heart to thunder in my ears as it slams against my chest so hard that I can barely breathe. My body is shaking as panic floods through me. I'm losing it. I've been so good. I haven't had a panic attack in forever, yet right now I feel one coming on and there's nothing I can do to stop it. He can't hurt Connor. He can't.
You thought you could get away with naming my son after your fucking lover? How can you let that monster crawl between your legs, Hayden? After everything you and I shared, you're just going to let that thing touch you? I thought you had pride. You thought you were too good to give my brothers what they wanted, but look at you now. Willing to suck a walking freak's cock, just for protection.
Stop it, I scream. The panic dying down, and in its place now is anger. Anger at the way he is talking about Michael. Of the things he's saying about Michael. He doesn't deserve to breathe the same air as Michael. Blade will never know what it means to be a good man. He'll never be anything but scum. Stop it! Leave Michael alone! He's worth 1,000 of you. He's a good man, and he's a great father. He's everything you aren't and will never be. I just keep screaming. All the years of pent-up anger and fear are surging through me. In the back of my mind, I'm trying to figure out how to get free. I have to get to Connor and save him. I need to get him away from Blade. Michael might have done that already. Maybe that's why Michael is not here. Blade pulls out a knife, and I know I've gone too far. I knew it, but I just couldn't control myself. With Blade, you have to keep a level head. I needed to keep control over my emotions, but I'm so tired of people hurting Michael, of not understanding him. I can't move because of the hold Blade has on my hair. I yank against it and feel the sting of pain, but he's not letting go. Instead, he takes the knife and slides the cold blade flat through the small opening in the cage. He lets it push against the side of my face. I do my best to keep from crying out. I have a feeling he'd like that too much, and I don't want to give him the pleasure. What I need is to try and scare him, to make him leave. You need to go, Blade. Michael will be back soon, and if he finds you here, he'll kill you. Really? He snorts. He'll kill you. He's vowed to. You need to go while you still can.
You have so much confidence in that scarred-up freak, he sneers.
Michael's vowed to kill you, I tell Blade, keeping my voice completely firm. And he's a man, a real man. He will keep his word. He won't stop until he does. If you were smart, you would run.
Michael, he jeers. Isn't going to do a goddamn thing, Hayden.
He will. He won't stop, I tell Blade with 100% certainty.
That's where you're wrong, Hayden. Beast's not going to do a fucking thing.
He abruptly releases me and steps away from the cage. He's laughing, and I have no idea why. He has to be even more insane than I gave him credit for. That's the only explanation.
Look at your precious Michael, he sneers.
I look frantically around the room, and that's when I see him. He's lying on the floor behind where Blade had been kneeling. Michael. He's lying on the floor, covered in blood, and he's got deep cuts all over his body. He's looking at me, but he doesn't see me. He doesn't see anything. His eyes are lifeless. He's dead. Michael's dead. I'm curled in a ball because of the height of the cage, but when I see Michael like that, I fall back on my ass, hard, and then back quickly against the other side of the cage. Michael! I scream. My whole world comes crashing down around me. Michael! I cry, my whole body shaking. What will I do without him?
Chapter 32. Beast. Hayden, Hayden, honey, what's wrong? Wake up, beauty, wake up! I tell Hayden over and over, still half asleep. I awoke to Hayden screaming out my name. Her eyes are closed and big fat tears are streaming down her face. She's crying so hard I'm afraid she's going to be sick. She's literally gasping for breath. I pull her into my body, gathering her up in my lap. I grasp her face with both of my hands and pull her up towards me. Beauty, it's okay. Come back to me, I tell her, treating her as I did when she was suffering from panic attacks. This doesn't feel like a panic attack, though. This feels completely different. Beauty, look at me, I order, overriding my fear and making my voice stern. I hold her face tightly, not allowing her to look away from me. Slowly, her eyes open wide and she stares at me. At first, I don't think she recognizes me. I don't see recognition on her face at all. Then, all at once, she takes in a deep breath, so deep it's like her first breath in months. Her body goes completely still, and then jerks up as she wraps her arms around my neck. I let her, putting mine around her in return. I hold her tight, pulling her body into mine, because that seems to be what she needs the most.
Michael,
she cries. You're alive? I have no idea what she means by that, so I continue to hold her and stroke her hair. I'm here, Hayden. I'm not going anywhere, I assure her.
You were dead and Blade was... Oh my God, Michael, you were dead?
She cries again, holding on to me. It's clear she had a bad dream, and not just a normal one. It's the kind I used to have after the accident. The kind that makes you relive your hell to the point that you're sure it's real, and even after you wake up, you expect to be drawn back into it. I still have them occasionally, but not often, mostly because I rarely sleep for more than a few hours at a time. Finally, she calms down, and I hold her while she tells me about the dream. Blade needs to die. I need to make his death slow and fucking painful. It was just a dream, Beauty, that's all. It wasn't real. You probably just overdid it yesterday. Plus, you're worried about balancing working at the shop and being here for Connor. You just need to learn to breathe and let it go. You're not Superwoman.
It seems so real, Michael,
she sighs, curling the side of her face against my chest. She's calmer, and slowly the tears are beginning to dry. I move us back down on the bed, laying down. Hayden curls around until she's looking at me. She lays her head back down on my chest, but when she immediately seeks out my hand, threading our fingers together, I smile. Her thumb moves across the scar on my hand. I think it calms her. I like that it does. It feels as if I give her something she needs, just by that simple gesture. I know, sweetheart. I get them from time to time. They get easier, I promise.
You get them?
Night terrors? Yeah.
Night terrors. That's what it felt like. I couldn't handle it if something happened to you, Michael. Especially if it was my fault,
she says, and her gray eyes are so full of emotion. Before Hayden, I've never had that. That look, this emotion, all of it. The surety of knowing that if something happened to me, someone's world would be less. Until this moment, I have never had someone who made me feel like they couldn't live just as well without me. Even with Annabelle, she loved me. I was her dad. But if something happened to me, I always knew my club would make sure she wanted for nothing. She would be happy. Right now, I'm pretty sure the words Hayden is giving me are gospel in her eyes. Hayden,
I know, you don't like hearing it, but I love you, Michael. If something happened to you, it would destroy me. I know I have Connor, but may God forgive me. If you died because of me, I wouldn't want to live.
You're talking crazy. You will always fight to live, Hayden. I demand it. Connor needs you. He needs to know that his mother would fight for him, bleed for him, and he needs to always see beauty in this world so he can appreciate it.
I like that you say I give you beauty,
she whispers, and she raises her head slightly to bring her lips close to mine.
Will you stick around for another 100 years to keep reminding me that I do that for you?
She asks, her tongue darting out to moisten her lips. I'm not going anywhere, Hayden. That I can promise you. Those 2 months without you were all I could handle. The thing about having beauty in your life, once you have something that precious and hold it in your hands, you can't let it go.
God, I love you,
she whispers. I feel those words all the way through me. She does. I see it in her eyes. I feel it in her touch. Hell, I can even hear it in her laugh. She surprises me by getting up and moving to her knees. She pulls the cover back and swings one of her legs over my body. She's wearing a pale, teal, silk nightshirt. I'd rather have her naked, but she still wears her bra because of the baby's milk. Still, I'd be a fool not to recognize how incredibly sexy she looks right now. Arched over me, her breasts barely contained by the silk bra, the lace sparkling in the early morning sunlight. My hand latches onto her ass, my fingers biting into the skin as I bring her sweet pussy against the hard edge of my cock and want to weep that she's wearing that damn piece of lace that keeps her soft, warm cunt from me. Fuck, Hayden, you're killing me here.
I want you inside of me, Michael,
she whimpers.
I want you to fuck me,
she adds, her tongue moving along my neck. I can't stand when people touch my scars, yet when Hayden does it, it brings peace. When she runs her tongue along flesh that should be deadened and feel nothing, I swear to God, I want to throw her down and ram so fucking far inside of her she can taste me. Motherfucker, I groan as my cock slips in just the right spot, and she starts riding back and forth on me, stroking my cock with her body, so that the lace fabric, instead of a barrier, becomes a slick glove holding my cock softly and bathing me in heat. "Beauty, we can't. You've not been cleared for sex," I remind her, just like I've reminded myself every fucking night since she had the baby. My poor balls are blue from waiting. "But I'm hungry, Michael," she says, looking down at me. I let my free hand grab her hair and I pull her mouth to mine. Our lips nip and taste each other, soft and slow at first, then picking up intensity as our hunger strengthens. Her tongue thrusts against mine as I swallow her moan of need. I grab her ass, about to forget all my self-control and plow into her, when we hear it. Crying. We both freeze, neither speaking or moving, as if that very act will somehow put Connor back to sleep. A few seconds later, the crying starts again and Hayden goes lax in my arms. Her forehead pushes against mine. "Connor's awake," I laugh. "That kid has bad timing," Hayden mutters, flopping over on her back. "It's dinner time. I'd be anxious too if my dinner looked that fucking good," I tell her, kissing her lips and getting off the bed. "I'll go. You lay still. I'll get him and bring him to you," I tell her, reaching to the floor and putting my sweats on. Hayden's eyes are glued to me. "It should be illegal to cover all that sexy up," she sighs. "You're the only woman in the world who could look at the mangled scars on my body and find them sexy," I answer, shaking my head and pushing my hair out of my eyes. "I love your scars, you know that. But I must confess I was mostly talking about your dick right now," she says playfully with a big grin. "We're not having sex for 2 more weeks, Hayden Graham. Not until the doctor says it's okay."
"Whatever you say, Michael. I'll wear you down,"
she calls out while I'm walking down the hallway. This is just another thing Hayden gives me. I wake up in the morning to beauty. I'm smiling when at one time in my life I never thought I'd smile again. Fuck, I'm laughing. When I bring Connor back to her and she fixes her bra and adjusts his mouth to her breast and I see that, I see even more beauty. When I pull her so she rests against my stomach and chest, with our baby on her breast, there's even more beauty. It's so fucking bright and large it overtakes me. This is life. This is everything. I hold them in my arms and close my eyes and enjoy the feeling of peace. In that moment, the smell of strawberries hits the air and my heart tumbles in my chest. Annabelle is here with me too. I hope she has the same feeling of joy that I have. When the scent increases, I think maybe she does.
Chapter 33, Hayden. "I'm so tired of rain," Jen says mournfully, staring out the window of the shop. "I can't say that I don't agree with you, since no one wants to get out in it to grab food," I murmur, strongly hinting. "You're so damned needy. Can't send your boyfriend?" she huffs. "He's at the back entrance in the alley," I mumble, not happy with the way the cake I'm decorating is looking. "What the heck is he doing out there?" "Taking a piss," Dee Dee yells. "He is not. He's on the phone with Victor, and then he was going to call an old friend. He swears someone was at our house last night," I tell her. "Was there?" Jen asks, showing concern. "I don't think so. He found some cigarette butts around the streetlight, but that proves nothing. Our street stays pretty busy. I think he's just being overly cautious." "Well, I'm glad he is. It's not like you haven't had way too much action lately," she murmurs. "Amen to that. I need a break almost as much as I need food," I murmur, looking up at her with a grin. "You're really a bitch. Why can't Dee Dee go?"